You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat DeVilla. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
Excellent. It's been too long. We've been slacking off. Also joining us is our good friend, Pat Archibald from South Carolina. Pat, welcome to the show again.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
So tonight we're going to talk about different things. Pat's got his hands on a Google TV box, right? What is it, from Logitech?
Yeah, the Logitech Review, Google TV.
Ah, cool, cool. So let's get right into it then. So how much is this unit selling for?
$299.
And is it worth it? That's the golden question.
I guess the simple answer is probably not. I'm sure it's going to come down in price, and features are going to be added to it, hopefully. So, early adopters, they always paid a price. So I'm paying a price right now.
Right. So the Google TV, for people who don't know, this is Google's stab at a home media device that can go out and get online media and aggregate data for you and make it available in one nice interface that's slick and easy to use. And it's supposed to reach out and pull everything in, right?
Yep. You can integrate your, if you got the coax coming to your house or a set-top box, you plug that into the unit as well. So, start out from the top. The setup procedure is pretty easy. You just plug it in, connect it to your TV, plug it to your AV receiver if you want to do that, and plug in your set-top box if you want to do that. And then setup procedure basically just asks you for, like, your zip code and what type of devices you're hooking it to. Like, I've got a Cisco RNG 150, I think. So I put that in there and then tell her what kind of TV I have. And then it's off to the races. I guess it gets the, you tell it what cable TV provider you have, so it's able to grab the listings and stuff like that. And I think you have to feed it that device information, basically, so you can turn those devices on and off. So the setup's relatively easy.
I'm kind of surprised. I thought the only set-top boxes it was going to support out of the out of the gate was going to be DirecTV boxes. I'm kind of surprised that it's working with your set-top box.
I think it supports a bunch of different set-top boxes, but it doesn't. The Dish DVR is what it really integrates with. That's the only one that you can actually go out there and access your recordings on your DVR.
So you can watch them through the Google TV interface.
Yeah, and I'm assuming they would show up in your search results and stuff like that.
So my guess is they're looking to integrate other boxes down the road as it goes along, different company DVRs, whatever, from different cable companies and satellite companies, maybe DirecTV at some point, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would think so. And they do talk to DLNA server, so it does talk to the Myth TV server, but you can't play back any of the recordings right now. You can view your listings. You can play your music via the DLNA server. But when you go to play the MPEG 2, it says the Logitech media player that's built into the system comes back and says that's not supported.
Now, this is running Android, so I imagine if someone ports Myth TV to Android, you'd be able to use it on this. And since it's Android, it's all open source. Anybody can have at it. So it's probably just a matter of time till features and new stuff get added in, I would imagine, once the community starts getting their hands on it.
Yeah, I guess the big thing right now is there's no marketplace. You can't download an app. If the marketplace was open, which I think is going to happen early in 2011, I could download like the Android Rock Player or something like that that supports a few more media types.
Well, that stinks. So
with Gingerbread, when that comes out, that'll support more media types. Like right now, you're kind of limited. I mean, that's kind of the trouble that I'm running into with writing the Myth Flow app that I was trying to write, is that you're very limited as the type of video that you can actually you know, stream to it or play on it at this time. And MIF doesn't currently natively, convert and stream automatically like it does with Flash and MPEG-4 to other formats. So, I mean, there's going to have to be a lot of work in place to get the some type of streaming in place for the MPEG-2 stuff and whatnot.
Now I know with like handheld devices, that's a limitation of what kind of video, embedded video that it could do, hardware playback, I don't know what kind of hardware this thing is using. Pat, do you know what kind of hardware is in there? Is it an ARM processor or MIPS or something?
No, I'd have to look it up. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's a big question, what the capabilities on there. I'm assuming it could do, does it do HD video?
Yeah, it certainly does. It's a Intel Atom Z515, a 1.2 gigahertz.
So my guess is there's probably an NVIDIA chipset on there too, right? If that's the case,
that I don't know.
If that's the case, it's almost like one of those Zotac box, It's an Intel Atom.
But the newer Atom, specs are calling for not having, an NVIDIA chipset on there for graphics. They're gonna do like their own, Intel like this. What is it, like a discrete chipset, I believe, that can handle, auto switching from, high definition, beefing it up for when you're actually playing something that's more power, intensive, power consumption intensive, and then it dials back when it doesn't need to.
Yeah, supposedly Intel is working on something similar that NVIDIA has with VDPAU. They're doing something similar. I don't know how far along it is.
I guess it's a big question as to whether we're going to be able to play MPEG-2 natively on this device in the future. I don't know.
So what are some of the formats you've tried on it?
Well, I was able to transcode one of the MIF TV recordings into H.264 and a MKV container, and that showed up in the DLNA server in the video listings, and it seemed to play fine. You don't have the ability to fast forward or, bookmark where you left off, so that's a big downer, but it did play, and it played pretty well.
Right. And so that's the whole thing with, these media devices. It's all about, what formats it could do and whatnot. Like, I had the Popcorn Hour for a while, and that thing could pretty much handle any video format. It could do AVIs, it could do MPEGs, it could do H.264s. It pretty much handled anything I threw at it. So it's
yeah, that was my experience with the Popcorn Hour, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty good, for what it did. It had a Sigma chip on there that could pretty much handle it. The problem with those devices that are based on that Sigma chip is the companies that license it, I think they have to sign an NDA, and they're not allowed to open that up at all. So a lot of the open source people, they want to go in and start hacking on it, and they can't because it's all closed off and everything's secret. But you would hope with Android, if they do something similar, that it would be completely open.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens once the market gets in there and what kind of apps come out of it.
So this is the first device that actually has it.
Does it integrate into your Google accounts at all, Patrick? Does it integrate into your Google accounts at all? Like, for instance, I have a Gmail account, but I also have, a Google Voice account. So I go to a different web page that I can interact with Google Voice outside of my phone or anything like that. Does it have something similar that you can access the box, information about the box through a Google, web page?
Well, not much. I mean, you do have to enter in a Google account. I assume that it saves maybe preferences and different things like that. But as far as, there's no Gmail client on this box. There's no Google Voice client or anything like that. So there's no integration to all the different Google apps that are out there, but you definitely had to enter in an account. So it's storing probably some, preferences or something in that storage area, but it doesn't integrate with anything else.
I assume that'll change.
Yeah, I mean, I think the possibilities are wide open. You can do a lot of different things with this. I mean, it'd be neat to, integrate Google Voice with it and have some indicators when you got email and stuff like that. So.
Now, as far as the online content, what's available and what's being blocked, and where's everything stand with that?
Well, the day that Google came out and released this out into the wild, pretty much everybody shut them down. CBS, Hulu, ABC, They've all got messages on their website when you go to it via Google TV saying, you know, sorry, but we're not going to allow you to see this content. I was able to view some videos on NBC.com and Fox.com. It's not a real pleasurable experience. I mean, it comes up in a browser just like, you know, you do it on your laptop or whatever. And then you kind of got to position the video portion of the page, you know, in the center, and then, you know, wait for it to start and wait for the commercials to play and different things like that. But, you know, big media doesn't want to give out this content without, I think they're looking for some money from Google. And I hope that Google doesn't pay them anything. And
yeah, I was going to say they probably got their hands
on it. Really,
isn't
it
just a Chrome browser on there? Isn't it just a Chrome browser on there, though?
Yeah, I've seen some people speculating that maybe there's something in the Flash player inside there that the media companies can detect that you're actually on a Google TV. There is an option in the Chrome browser to change the what's that thing that you set to tell it what type
user
of browser
agent.
You are, the user agent.
User
you
agent.
Can there's three settings on that. You can go in there and actually key one in, or there's one called a default and another one called something else. There's three little settings. So, I mean, that was a hack that I think worked initially, but I think they're going a little bit deeper and maybe into the Flash player or something to find out that it's actually Google TV.
Yeah, when Froyo first hit on the Nexus 1, I installed it, and I went to the Hulu site, and it worked for, like, literally 2 days. And then after that weekend, they shut it down for mobile devices. So, you know, places like Hulu, they want to make money. They want to license with everybody and get a piece of the action. It's unfortunate, but that's how they're going about it.
Now, is all of, like, you know, Hulu, you know, I see what you were, you know, you have some information here for us, Patrick, about, like, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox. Isn't all of that content available through Hulu as well anyway? Just in general, it, you know, most of that's available already? I think that when they push out this app... talking over each other here. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead, Dan. Finish your sentence.
Oh, I think that once, you know, some type of, like, a player gets, you know, a Hulu Plus player, I guess is what it's going to be, it gets integrated into it, that it will kind of make having to go to all these different websites, you know, kind of not necessary. But I assume also that these, you know, Google itself is just doing a broad search for this stuff and then ultimately taking you to these sites, correct? I guess I'm throwing a lot out there.
Well, I'm not a big Hulu user, so I really don't know what broadcast companies have, you know, denied them access to their content. I know it doesn't include everything. You know, I'm not sure which ones it does include. But, if Hulu, you know, would be the central place for all that content to reside, then, you know, that would be great, you know, if they allow Google TV to get to it, but they'll probably want some kind of deal with Google. So it's a big mess.
What I've noticed about the Hulu, the Plus thing they have now, you know, Hulu Plus is like that subscription service, which really didn't have much when it first came out. I think, when did it come out? Like back in December, I think. Really didn't have much on there. I don't know if it's improved at all. I haven't looked at it in a while, but you're starting to see that Hulu Plus being offered in embedded devices. For instance, my Sony Blu-ray player it's got an entry now for Hulu Plus, but it says coming soon. So my guess is they're rolling that out into more devices now, and they're looking to get money out of it. Obviously, they want a subscription out of that from people.
Yeah, and being that Sony's one of the main partners for Google TV right now, I assume you'll see that coming across in their TVs. I believe they're going to put Google TV on their Blu-ray players as well.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody is about the DRM more than Apple, it's probably Sony. So how long have you had it now, Pat? You've had it a few days, right?
Yeah, just 2 days. I think I brought it home Friday and didn't really start playing with it until yesterday.
So just playing with it over the weekend, what do you think? Is it worth at this point to get, or you think it's still needs a little development and a little fleshing out to really get it going?
No, unless you're like me and just want to play with stuff and interested in media, and, you know, if you're really looking for a device, you know, to rely on and you know, play back your content, I wouldn't recommend going out and getting a Google TV right now. It definitely holds promise. I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing some changes in it. So it's, I'm glad I bought it. You know, I wish it was a little less expensive, but it's been pretty neat. You know, we were talking about getting TV content and all that from other, from Hulu. Well, there's, I guess, another option you can do is, I guess, Netflix. You know, if you've got a, an account with Netflix, they offer, you know, some TV shows on there as well. So that's another avenue. There again, you're paying for it, but it's possible, I guess.
Yeah, I got the Netflix on my Sony Blu-ray player, and it's pretty awesome. You know, I bought my Blu-ray player more for the Netflix capability than for actual Blu-ray playback. The fact that it played Blu-ray was just an extra, you know, for the money that I paid for it. It's worth it. You know, you pay $10 a month, you get like one disc out at a time, and you have unlimited access to their streaming content. And there's a ton of stuff on there. You know, there's a lot of TV shows, old shows and everything. There's a lot of stuff for kids. And there's a lot of movies on there, too. It's so far, I'm loving it. I think it's a great alternative than, say, you know, getting the high-tier cable channels like the HBOs and the Showtimes and whatnot. I think it's a better deal. For $10 a month, you get way more, way better content, more content, all on demand than any of the cable providers can give you, I think. The only thing that stinks about...
How about current season shows? Do you see current season shows?
You don't,
I
mean, see
like,
current...
Are you watching an episode of House or something?
No, that's the only thing they,
well,
that, they're not really that
not
into.
Not entirely true. They just announced a deal with NBC, so like if you're watching The Office or you miss The Office this week, the day after, you could get The Office, you know, right on there now, plus any of anything else in their current library, as well as anything else they own. For instance, all of Battlestar Galactica now is now available, you know, which only previously was available, you know, from the mail, you know, from getting the DVDs in the mail, is now available online for streaming. So, I mean, anything that they have out there that's no longer, you know, currently running, but anything new out there, the day after it airs on live TV, on a broadcast, it's going to be available on the streaming site. Or, I mean, available for streaming, I should say. And I assume we'll see the other deals like that coming down the way.
Yeah, the catalog is getting bigger and bigger. It's really getting large. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of stuff on there now.
I think I saw something recently that they said they're now classifying themselves as an online streaming content provider versus a mail, like a, I don't know, I don't want to say mail order, but you know what I mean? It's where you would receive the disc in the mail. That's going to be secondary.
And well, they finally got up to Canada. Anyway. They opened that up in Canada, and they're only doing the streaming part. They're not doing the physical disc deal. They're not doing the physical disc deal up there because it's cheaper to do the streaming.
Did you hear about this launch, though, that they did up there? They hired actors to go walk around this you know, place where all these reporters were and saying, oh, I'm doing this, I'm loving it, it's great, you know. Then the reporters started asking all these actors questions, and they're like, well, I'm just being paid to come here right now. So,
no, I didn't hear about that.
It was a big debacle for them.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Well, I know people up there have been wanting it for the longest time, and I'm sure they're happy that they have it now. I just wish they had a native Linux client. I would be happy. And also an Android client, too.
Me too.
Supposedly that's coming down the pike. I know the Android port's coming. I just wish they had a native Linux client, too. Even if they had to charge for it, I think it would be worth it. People would be willing to pay for it.
I think so. Yeah.
Although
I don't know that they could, considering they would send out you discs for, you know, your PlayStation 3 or your Wii, you know, and allow you to, you know, to view their content with a free disc anyway. I can't imagine that they would be charging you for it.
Aren't they getting away from that, though? Aren't, like, some of the players, you don't need
Wii,
the disc anymore?
I think they're all done now. I think the last was the Wii I saw the other day that you no longer need to put the disc in. You just go into its marketplace and download the app so that it just gets integrated right into the Wii desktop. And I believe I thought I also saw the PlayStation 3s, and I don't even know what the current version of them is, but they now no longer need a disc as well. And the Xbox 360 never needed a disc, not that I'm aware of at least. But they all the game consoles now no longer need to have that.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
That's the way it should be, really. I know Apple TV, does that have Netflix in there now, too? I think it does now, finally.
I believe it does.
Yeah, the hockey puck.
I mean, if you could get it on an iPad, I wouldn't see why they wouldn't put it into their Apple TV box as well.
Well, another device. We'll see how it comes down with Google TV. You know, if anybody can make it work, it's Google. They got tons of cash and a lot of people developing for them, so we'll see how that goes. One of the other things,
Sony, I saw, just opened up the developers, site for their Google TV stuff. So you should shortly be able to see, an SDK available for the Sony lines. I hope that it wouldn't be like real specific to Sony, that you could, basically, write an app for it, and then, once Samsung puts out their Google TV offerings, it would run on a Samsung TV without any issue. But I guess we'll just all have to wait and see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Whether they're going to make it available, for non-hardware setups. I know Sony's coming out with a TV. Who else was? There was a couple other partners they announced when they did this. I forget who was
Samsung
up there.
Samsung announced that they're going to be putting Android into everything.
So TVs, Blu-rays, the whole deal.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe even the refrigerators will have it.
Toasters.
No, they are fully behind, behind Android, and they are, they're committed to putting it into a lot of their products.
Now, my big question is, there's a lot of privacy concerns, especially with different Google things. You think this thing is collecting data on what you watch and sending them back to Google? Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, honestly. And I'm not like one of these conspiracy nutwigs, in privacy. I tell people, anything you do online, consider it, public knowledge.
I would think from like a Nielsen standpoint that they may be collecting that type of information, what it is you're watching and cataloging that so that they could, compile it against what everybody else is watching. Or even just general usage statistics. I would think they would want to know what people are actually doing with it. If you're using it to stream, your local media versus, stream something from the web. And maybe even building up a directory of, where people are going to, so that they could somehow eventually, just browse through that type of stuff, through some type of an app, I would say.
At least the ratings would be correct, That Nielsen's such a small population. Something like this would be a much larger population and be a hell of a lot more accurate than anything that's out there.
It would be kind of nice if they open this up as well to more than just, set-top boxes and TV, so that you could actually, integrate everything that you do and say on your desktop, or if I'm away and I'm on my work laptop, for instance, and I could still access all of my Google TV content from a machine, and that could all then still play into the ratings and everything like that.
I don't know. It's good and bad, The bad is, the being able to collect data about people. The good is it's more accurate. And TV shows that are like borderline get canceled might actually survive.
But I'm thinking now from a Myth TV standpoint, what could we do to make this integration, a lot better? I know DLNA is available, and there was some chatter on the mailing list a while back about some possible improvements that somebody was making to it, and I believe they were committed, and I think they will be in 24 when it does get released, which should be relatively soon since release candidate 1 of 24 was just posted the other day. But I think Myth TV has all of the streaming capabilities built into it. It has the ability to expose the back end information, so you could have, for instance, a Google TV connecting to a Myth TV master back end and querying, say, the listings or the recordings and all that kind of stuff, and get access to things like, flagging points so that you can skip commercials or I don't know that they could actually do that, legally without any modification, but you could get access to all that information and be able to stream it. I mean, it streams from my back end to my front end, in my house, so it should be able to stream otherwise, even over something besides the DLNA stuff.
It's only a matter of time.
I think there are a lot of possible integration points here, and once we get an SDK available to us, we'd be able to find out, more closely how we can do this integration.
Yeah, that's the key.
Have you heard any talk of? I was just going to ask. I guess until we get a player that plays MPEG 2, which is the way the content comes off of the HD Home Run, and I guess so many other devices out there, we won't be able to do too much.
Yeah, that's the key. MPEG 2, H.264, those are the main ones.
I mean, you can always set up a job to transcode all that stuff, but I mean, it's an extra step in the process. I don't know.
It's a pain in the ass is what it is.
Yeah, my viewing habits a lot of times is I wait 15 minutes for the show to get started, and then I come in and I start watching it. I transcoded a 30-minute show today, and I think it took nearly 2 hours. So,
really,
doesn't fit my viewing habits, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah, but I've noticed that shows that are recorded on the PVR 1212, they take a long time to re-encode it to different formats. It just, I guess that's just the nature of the format, you know?
Yeah, this one came off the HD Home Run.
Yeah, those are MPEG-2s. I would think eventually you might be
able to...
Go ahead, Pat.
I was just going to mention one thing before we get off the Google TV. Was the on your mobile phone, your Android mobile phone, the Logitech Harmony remote app that's on here is pretty slick. One of the things I like about it the best is you can be on any, you know, if you're browsing the web or looking at a YouTube video or whatever on your Android phone, you know, you can just click on that URL and say, I want to share this, and you say, share it to my Harmony remote, and it pops it right to the to Google TV screen. So that's pretty neat. There's some other features on here. It's really an in-depth app. This is probably the most complex app I've seen. It's got like 5 or 6 different panels and a bunch of different menus, and you know, anything you could do with a remote, you can do with this thing. It's got the little thing where you can, you know, swipe. If you're looking at your Picasa photo albums, you can just swipe to the left or the right, and it just goes through your photos really quick. So the app on your Android mobile phone for this Harmony remote is pretty sweet.
That's cool. I'd like to check it out in person. Who's selling them? Is like, can you get that at like Best Buy or any of the big chain outlets?
Yeah, I think I saw that you can buy them in Best Buy now as of just, I think it was Thursday or whatever, and they have setups for the Google TVs themselves, the actual Sony TVs. They've had them out for a couple of weeks now. I saw some emails and some postings about it on like Engadget and stuff like that.
I have to go check it out just to see it in person to see what it's about.
Well, make another trip to South Carolina, man.
Yeah, we'll come over. Yeah, so it sounds like it's promising. It sounds like
Patrick's got all kinds of toys. He's always tweeting about all kinds of toys and stuff like that. So I definitely want to come and check that out sometime.
Yeah, guilty as charged, man. It's fun.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. So did you guys get a chance to upgrade your Mythbuntu systems? Ubuntu 10.10 came out a couple weeks ago. And I upgraded all my systems.
Unfortunately, I haven't.
I upgraded my desktop to family computer, no problems. I upgraded my laptop, no problems. I upgraded my my main system and also my my front end, my Ion front end box, and I had zero problems with any of them. Now, the version that I upgraded to, it's just the underlying operating system. It's not anything related to MITTV. The version of MITTV is 23.1, which is pretty much the same version that was on 10.04.
Right.
But everything else underneath it, under the hood, has all been updated. I'm sure once 0.24 comes out in Myth, that they'll make it available and you can upgrade that. So this is just, you know, a system upgrade, basically.
Yeah, I think there are some slight changes, however, because I pulled out the hard drive from my desktop here and put in a blank one and put 10.10 on this one, Ubuntu 10.10 on this one, and I decided, since I don't know if I had mentioned it on here or not, if we had been on here or not, but my actual HDTV, the bulb in it blew again, and I'm fed up with buying a bulb every year, so I'm going to put this one out and get another one and replace it. But in the meantime, my master, you know, back end is sitting there in the entertainment center, still does all the recordings. I just watch everything on the front ends now. So I decided to put a front end on my actual desktop here so that I can have it while I'm down in the basement or if I'm working out or something like that. And I am seeing some slight differences in some of the menu, like just maybe like some reordering of things or just even placement, like they've moved like from this screen to that screen and stuff like that. So there, I think there are some slight changes in the 10.10 version.
Yeah, there are some things in there. Actually, in the Mythbuntu Control Center, there's a backup utility in there to back up your database. There's different variations of what you could do in there. That's been updated. And also I noticed Myth Export, John Babb, who we've had on, he's gone and updated that.
Yep.
He has some default configurations for different phones and whatnot. So he's updated that.
Right.
So, yeah, there's definitely a few things that have been updated. But for the most part, it's pretty much the same. And
I'm just trying to kind of find the time myself when I can actually update it. When I last had my hardware issues with my server and I rebuilt the master backend, I started noticing some things. And I don't want to get into it here. I'll get into it on a future episode. But things like my I have multiple cards in my, you know, multiple tuner cards in my machine, be it either the HD PVR 1212 or a PVR 150, or there's a third card in there too, which is just a what is it? It's from HotPots as well. It's an HVR 1250. The cards themselves, the actual two of the tuner's cards, they would swap places.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You know, if you rebooted. So I found out how to resolve this, and I'm going to get in, you know, do some...
Would you use UDEV?
Likewise as well. I have... you had to do some UDEV rules and do that kind of stuff to,
yep.
to really isolate, you know, certain characteristics about it. So, like I said, I'll get into some of that.
I had the same issue episode. When I had my PVR-150 card, my old setup, and the other card that I had in there. The secondary card that I had in there that was doing the QAM tuning also had an analog tuner.
Yep.
And it seemed like on certain boot ups it would detect that analog tuner that I wasn't using. And it would flip the order on it. And what I wound up doing was doing a UDEV rule where you you physically put the address in there of each card. So it remembers what
Yeah, that's ultimately I have a script that I found, you know, out on the forums that somebody wrote that actually generates appropriate. You give it some key information and it'll generate the appropriate UDEV rules. And
yeah, it's
I'll talk about all.
It's kind of an annoyance, you know. It seems to happen more with PCI cards more than anything. When you have multiple PCR cards, sometimes it happens.
I also had the issue with multiple sound cards being in there too, because you know my. You know, once I got to a certain level of NVIDIA graphics driver, my NVIDIA graphics card also became a sound card because of HDMI. So certain things, you know, it would pick that one first versus the one that was on, you know, actually installed in the system. And, you know, so I had some...
What if that was a Pulse Audio issue, you know, that piece of crap? Pulse Audio seems to have gotten better.
It wasn't a Pulse Audio issue.
Pulse Audio seems to have gotten better the way that it's been implemented in Ubuntu, but... For the longest time, man, it was a piece of crap.
Oh yeah, but yeah. So I mean, I've come across some ways on how to, you know, manually go in and say, you know, this is the order in which these things should be detected. You know, first and second and whatnot, and you know, naming the device a certain way so that that whether the card, you know, position changes or not, the device is always going to be there because it's just kind of like symlinks it for you automatically. So there's some stuff there that I'll go over in a future episode with that.
Yeah,
and I'm interested to see
annoyances.
If any of that stuff has been resolved with you know, the 1010, because I know a lot of stuff from the underlying system seems to have been, you know, greatly improved. And for instance, now this the NVIDIA 210 card that I have, which it recognizes there's a sound card there, but no actual audio devices on it in Ubuntu 10.04, the version of ALSA that they were using, which is 1.21. Or 1.0.21 now is like 1.0.23, which should have support for all of this. So I should see some of these issues go away.
You would hope.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I had zero problems with my upgrades. I was very happy with the way they all turned out.
That's good. That's you know, I'm looking forward then to being able to just fire up an upgrade and just let it go.
Yeah, I know. For a fact, is when you upgrade Myth TV, there's a certain identifier on the database version that's running, and when you upgrade one box, you have to upgrade all of them because they all have to be on the same version. Otherwise, it won't work.
Yes, and this is the reason why there's a .23.1 that's out there, because they changed the version number inside the database, and it kind of screwed everybody at that point. You know, and the Mythbuntu guy said, hey. Let's just, you know, put out a, because they have the ability through their PPAs to put out the appropriate version or to isolate the version and allow you to select it from the Mythbuntu Control Center, which version you want to be running. You can just quick hit a drop down box and change everything if need be, dist upgrade, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, you can set up the PPAs in there, and I recommend that you do that. So you set it for 23.1 and you get all the updates.
Did you upgrade, Patrick?
No, I haven't upgraded my Myth boxes. I have one laptop here that I've got 1010 on, but everything else is still 1004.
And what do you think about the laptop?
It's great. I think they did a pretty good job on 1010. You know, some nice UI enhancements. And I've got that Apple trackpad thing that I was trying to get the multi-touch to work. Kind of dropped off of that for the moment. I think they got some more work to do in that multi-touch, the U-touch thing that they're working on. But that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. You know, when everything goes perfectly well on an upgrade, you know, people, it's quiet. And it seems to be more quiet than in recent versions.
I did my wife's netbook, and it took a long time just because it's such a low-powered machine, but afterwards, reboot, it was fine. I mean, no issues whatsoever. I even put the Unity interface on there, and that just seems to work, you know, really nice on there.
Yeah, what I noticed...
I don't think she's quite sold on it yet, but...
On the family computer, I think I upgraded 2,600 packages, and on my MIT systems, I did about 800.
That's pretty amazing, really. You think about it, all those changes, and it still comes out smelling like a rose.
Yep. When everything's done and they cross the T and dot the I's, that's a good thing. But when when things break and the wheels come off, then it's everyone's screaming bloody murder.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but they've done a good job this time around. I have to give them credit. And like Dan, you mentioned that 024 MIT TV, they get the release candidate, and I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to a lot of stuff that they're doing in there. Some new changes that I saw, at least specifically related to stuff that I've been doing, like with the Android app and stuff like that, is that they fixed like a lot of like the RSS issues in the in MythWeb. It looks like there's some new stuff coming down for audio. Like I was saying, I was having issues with getting the appropriate audio device. You can go in and type in there, you know, specifically what you want to have if you know what it is offhand. Now there's going to be a new architecture in there that looks like it's going to be able to go in and list every audio device it can find on your machine. And you can then just select it down there. It's not going to be that static list of audio devices anymore. I was reading through a lot of the changes, you know, the other day, and it just looks like there's a lot of stuff that's going to be coming down. I think we're finally going to start seeing the precursors to the Myth Music rewrite that's going on there.
Yay!
I think there's going to be some preliminary support for the storage groups as well, so you don't got to be doing like a Samba or NFS share around for that type of stuff anymore. I don't know how complete it is or how complete it will be by the time that they drop 24. It might, like I said, it might just be like a preliminary thing. There was, what else was it? A lot of like the UI stuff has, you know, been rewritten to use the new Myth UI stuff. It looks like. I'm just trying to think of what else I saw in
the music player. That's what I'm looking forward to when they do the rewrite.
Yeah. Right. I think there's been some more work again on channel scanning. That's going to be coming as well, so that it should ease that burden a little bit. You know, if you need to go in and rescan stuff. Plus the Seton, you know, tuner, I think that might have some preliminary support for it as well inside of this release. So
really?
I mean, we'll be looking forward to that.
I noticed those are Blu-rays initially being supported also.
Yes, and I think with the older stuff, with a lot of older, you know, I think the encryption code has changed again on it. But now since recently that the master key has been released, you know, that may. Somebody,
yeah.
Where's DVD John at? He needs to go and write us a little.
It's been cracked. The master key's been cracked. That's an eventuality.
There should be a lot coming down. I think the UI is going to be a heck of a lot faster as well. That was something I saw in there. They've cleaned up a lot of that code. Crystal HD cards. If you're getting one of those, or if you have one of those in your machines, you'll be able to take advantage of that stuff as well. So there's definitely a lot of stuff that's going to be coming in 24. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
It's always exciting when they have a new release.
What are your guess for a time frame on 24 coming out? When do you think it'll come out?
I'm gonna say maybe by the end of the month, or maybe the middle of next month.
I'd say 3 weeks tops. Close. 3 weeks is my guess. Cool.
We'll have to see if we can get Robert McNamara back on to tell us about it. You know, once it finally, you know, is going to get ready to drop.
Yeah, it's good stuff. On the topic of the audio player, I don't know. You try out some of the audio players that are like an XBMC or Boxy, and you see how inadequate the current Myth TV audio player is. It really is falling behind. They really need to do the rewrite and get that done pretty quickly. Pat, you're running XBMC, right? Isn't that a nice audio player they have in there?
Yeah, it's really nice. It looks good, and you know, it's functional, and you know, if they can steal some tricks out of that and put it into Myth, that would be good.
Plus, it has like a plugin for like Last.fm. You know, being able to do that stuff is nice. Yeah, one thing I noticed is you're starting to see Pandora on a lot of devices now, too. People don't know Pandora is like an audio streaming service. They don't really charge anything right now. They have clients on a lot of different devices.
I love it.
They have it on the iPhone. They have it on the Android devices. My Sony Blu-ray player has an entry in the menu now. I can play Pandora stuff in there now. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I use it a good bit, too.
It's nice, you know. You don't have to lug around CDs or anything, or even just audio files. You know, log in and start streaming, you know, whatever music you're into.
And on Linux, you can crank up that application called Pithos, P-I-T-H-O-S. And you don't have to deal with Flash or anything like that. That thing is awesome. It broke a couple of weeks ago. They changed some keys or something, and the devs were on it like flies on, you know what. They had it fixed in about 24 hours, man. It was awesome.
So that's a third-party app that hooks into that. You can play, like, if you have an account, you'd be able to access all your content and whatnot in there.
Yeah, it's a pretty slick little thing.
I got to try that out. What is that, Python base?
I'm just looking for it in the software center. It's not in the software center.
Yeah, I think you got to get the PPA for it. But yeah, I think it's Python based or whatever. It's real light. It's super light. So much better than having to deal with Flash.
I got
to
check that out now that you mentioned it. So what's your Netflix pick of the week, Dan?
Lately, it's been Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, Battlestar.
Started with the 78-79 series, and I finished that one, and then I, you know, upon your recommendation, I avoided 1980. I did a little research on it, saw it like took place like 30 years later, you know, something like that. But I decided to start taking a look at the, the sci-fi series, the one on Sci-Fi Channel, and I've been a fan of Caprica since that came out, and I've been getting caught up on the either the original ones, because I had somehow or another I just never got a chance to take a look at it, and I've been really digging that.
Now, is that HD, the sci-fi series one?
Yes, the streaming ones are. The discs are still the original, you know, whatever they press. And
I gotta check that out. I have the original series in my queue. I've been watching those, but I should check out the quality of the newer ones. Well,
it detects it and it throttles it when it needs to, but for the most part, since I ran network lines up to that machine now, so I got full, you know, gigabit internal and speedy access to the outside world. It just streams without a hiccup. You know, I mean, it's been really great.
That's good. My Netflix pick is this movie from 1978. It was a low-budget sci-fi movie called Laser Blast. I don't know if you guys remember this. Basically, the story is this. It takes place out in Arizona. And this guy, he gets picked on by the other people, like, that he's, you know, in circles that he hangs out with, people he knows and whatnot, and his girlfriend gets picked on, too. And there's, like, this scene where there's this alien dude who's got this laser gun strapped on his arm. And all of a sudden, this other ship, alien spaceship, comes out. And it's these turtle alien dudes that kind of look weird. They're like these claymation aliens. Remember, this is 1978 here. And they killed the other alien, and but they leave behind the laser rifle. So, you know, lo and behold, a couple of days later, this kid finds the thing. And he also finds this amulet thing that's like the key to operate it. He puts it around his neck, and it starts like to mutate him. And he starts walking around at night like in this weird state, where he doesn't remember any of it, and he goes around terrorizing everybody with the laser rifle. It's a pretty crappy movie, but it's pretty funny. It's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah. I'll have to add to my queue and take a look.
It's pretty crappy. Nice B sci-fi / horror movie from the 70s. Laser Blast.
Patrick, when you get a chance, I just kind of thought of this with the with your Google TV, since you can just go to any website. Go to GetJar and see if you can download and install the Angry Birds on there, since it's not technically a part of the marketplace yet. You can download and install stuff. I would be interested to see if that worked.
Yeah, I've tried downloading an APK, and it comes back and says Chrome won't play this media or something like that. There's really no download. Yeah, there's no download function in Chrome. They've kind of backed off a couple of things. When you're in Chrome, you don't see the tabs up top. They're actually there. Well, you get a total of three. If you go to the fourth tab, your oldest tab goes away. So you better not be filling out a form on that one or whatever. You'll lose all that data. But Chrome's got a little a couple of things done to it to prevent you from downloading stuff and trying to run apps, I guess.
How's the web experience on that, on the browser that's on there?
It's pretty, yeah, the browser's, it's pretty much Chrome. Well, it is Chrome, but there's pretty good response on it. The only thing I know that is slower is when you do hit Control T to get a new tab. That takes, a slight second, not like on your PC or whatever. But other than that, once you get on there, it's pretty quick. Not bad.
Is it better than the browser that's in Myth TV?
What do you mean by that? The browser in Myth TV, what do you mean?
You ever use that thing? I've looked on it a few times. I've gone to websites and that. Have you used that at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, much better than that. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I've used that before. That was kind of painful. But yeah, the Google Chrome and Google TV is much better than that.
I guess all the fonts and everything is all nice and set up for TV.
Yeah, the fonts are, large enough to where you could, see it 10, 20 feet away if you got a big enough screen.
Is there a YouTube interface, or is there a specially coded interface? You just go to the default website.
Well, when you go to the YouTube website, it recognizes, I guess, that you're on Google TV, and it'll ask you if you want to use this, let's see, what is it called? The lean back version. And then that takes you to a kind of a different interface than you would see on just a regular PC, where, pretty much the whole screen is the video itself. And then down at the bottom, there's like a list of thumbnails of all the different videos you can view, and you can just right-click and go through those until you find one you want to view, and you click on it, and then it shows up full screen. So the lean back is pretty good, but once you get out of that lean back, it goes right back to the old, the YouTube web interface that everybody else sees.
That's cool. At least they got something in there specific for it.
Yep.
One of the
apps that they've got listed on the top is CNBC Real Time, which I don't care anything about finance like that, but it's a pretty good app. It has a video on the left side of the screen. There's a video, and then on the right hand side, there's like a menu where you can go through your different videos. That idea, I think, is pretty good. If instead of taking off when you're looking for content, just automatically pop up a Chrome browser, that just leaves a little bit to be desired. Once the marketplace gets open, I think people will write apps, and I think that's the better way to go, is to have a real app to do these things instead of using the Chrome browser. I mean, the Chrome browser works, but it's nothing like using Myth TV, that's for sure.
I would think the whole web browsing thing would be pretty important to them. That's like their thing. What about music? Online audio? Is there anything in there for that?
Yeah, well, there's a Pandora client. I'll just run off the different apps that they got here on the front of pages. Like, they got the CNBC Real Time. They got the Gallery, which is basically the same Gallery app you have on your Android mobile phone, hooks into Picasa. Then you got Google Chrome, and then the Logitech Media Player, and that's where you can go look at your DLNA content. And then they've got this Logitech Vid HD, which I think is the video conferencing. I don't have the Logitech camera, but supposedly you can do video conferencing with family members or whatever. Then there's a Napster client on here. I'm not sure why. Then there's an NBA Game Time, which has some stats, and you can watch a game if it's in progress. I haven't tried that, but it looks pretty neat. And then there's a Netflix app, Pandora. Then you got your settings. It looks a lot like an Android mobile phone settings. And then there's a TV icon where you just hit that and you go straight to your set-top box. And then there's a Twitter app. And that's about it so far. Then they've got places where you can do bookmarks. You bookmark certain websites. And they've got this thing called Q, which you go in there and you can subscribe to podcasts or videocasts or whatever. And it'll keep track of all that kind of stuff. And then there's the Amazon VOD menu item. But all that does is send you to the web, just like if you were doing it on a PC. Now, there is a little disclaimer on their website that says HD video is coming to Google TV soon, so I assume they're going to have an app just for Amazon Video on demand, so that'll be good when that comes about.
You guys ever use that service?
Yeah, I've tried it a couple of times. It works pretty good.
Yeah, I've used it a couple of times. It's pretty good. I've had good experience with that.
I've never had to use it yet.
I got some freebies, some coupon codes from Amazon and for the videos, and I tried it out, and it worked real well. The quality was nice. It was HD. No lag or whatever. I didn't get any, like, stoppages or nothing. It's a nice option to have, you know? You can rent the video for, whatever, $3-4, whatever. It's any different than going to the video store, you know? And most of the video stores are kind of limited, you know, high-def stuff that they have. At least the ones around here that I've seen. I kind of wish they had more of a selection. Well, you guys got anything else? If we don't, we're going to wrap it up. What do you guys say?
Yeah, let me hit a couple of topics here before we get out of here.
Shoot, man.
So what do y'all think about this Seton Infinity TV 4? Are y'all going to buy one when it comes out?
I don't know if I got $400 to drop on a capture card.
Yeah.
Now, if the nice people at Seton want to send me one for, you know, to try it out and do a review, I'll be more than willing. But I don't think I'm going to have the money to drop $400 on.
Yeah, I'm about in the same boat. I'm pretty happy with my over-the-air content with the HD Home Run.
Now, I'm more curious about the HD Home Run device because it's a dual tuner. That'll probably be a little more affordable, like in the $200 range. That, I think, is a little more doable.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really more interested in that myself. Not sure when the release date is on that. Have you heard?
It's been quiet. And they might show something in January at CES. So.
Makes you wonder if something went wrong.
Who knows? It sounds like the you know, when I interviewed Jeremy Hammer from Seton, he was talking about the group that does the management of the cable card and whatnot, and it sounds like they've loosened it up quite a bit.
How about the HTP centric podcast? Have you talked to those guys yet? Maybe getting them on?
I haven't talked to them though. I wouldn't mind talking to them though.
I have over Twitter. But nothing. We haven't set up anything concrete. I know you've been on. I've heard you on a couple of times. Actually, you and Guru, you know, have been on it a couple of times. And I would like to at some point, you know, get to talk to those guys.
Yeah, I think that'd be that would make it an interesting show.
I'm still trying. I still want to try to get on to the Home Theater Geeks podcast. So, you know, I'm still putting that out there. Send them an email saying, hey, I'm trying to get on there so we can talk about Myth TV.
Yeah, Dan, you're going to build $5,000 Myth boxes, right? You're going to sell them commercially?
Yeah, right. I'm going to build $5,000 Myth boxes, charge you $10,000, you know.
Hey, if you can get somebody to give you the money, man, more power to you.
Hey, yeah. But no, I just want to get out there just to kind of, you know, show the other alternatives. A show you don't need to spend, you know,
$3,000.
$500 for a box, and then buy Xbox 360s to put all over your house just to get the content otherwise. At least that's the way they defined it, you know, with the guy that they had from, what is it, S3 Media, I think is what it was called.
I don't know. The thing that got me...
Other alternatives out there.
Listen to the HTP-centric podcast. They were talking about, like, the front ends that you can possibly have with Windows Media, that you have to re-encode everything for to be able to watch anything. To me, that sounds ridiculous.
I really don't know anything about it, yeah.
It sounds a little crazy. And the other thing is, it doesn't seem that there's a database. You know how, like, MythTV has a database and everything's stored in there? And you're able to access it and whatnot? It sounds like everything is just a file to them, and supposedly, you know, organizing everything's a bit of a pain in the ass if you have, these large collections of media.
Last thing I want to say is I want to wish my wife a happy anniversary. Tomorrow, the 25th, we'll be married 7 years.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, Pat, thanks for coming on the show again. It was nice talking to you again.
Appreciate you having me on. It was a blast.
Anytime, man. You're always welcome. All righty, then. We're going to wrap it up, everybody. Take care. It's been great talking to you. Hopefully, we'll get the next show out a little sooner than this time. You know, just, you know,
yeah.
Fighting the illness and...
break here or something like that?
Fighting the illness and, you know, whatnot. Making excuses. Pod fading. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, we'll try to make it more consistent. I'm sure, you know, with the new release of Myth 024, things will heat up a little bit more. And we'll try to be more regular about the releases. But everybody, thanks for listening, and we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
See you later.